Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is the D Word podcast, where we talk dementia. Thanks for joining me for another edition of the D-Word podcast. I'm always looking for guests with a story to tell, so I'm delighted that on this edition we welcome Gaiti Betts-Cotello as my guest. She's a nurse practitioner and a health writer from Boston, Massachusetts, whose father is living with dementia. Katie, welcome to the D Word. Pleasure to have you here as my guest. Plenty to talk about. You're a nurse, you're a health writer, your father is living with dementia as well. So plenty of things for us to touch on. Before we start on all that, though, I mean, as a health, were you always destined to have a career in a health? Was it always your interest?
No, actually. Thank you for having me first. But no, it actually wasn't. It was a second career for me. I used to work in sales and catering, which is very kind of random when you compare it to what I'm doing now. But I sort of always knew that I was a bit of a caretaker. I was always the person in my college dorm that had like all the remedies and things like that. I came to school with things like that. Nobody else did. So I guess I was in some way sort of destined for it. And my mom wanted to be a nurse and she wasn't. So when I decided that I would go back to school to become a nurse, she was just tremendously happy. So here I am now and I have no regrets.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, tell us a little bit about your dad, to start with. I mean, when did you first notice that perhaps things weren't quite right?
Yeah, so my dad is a dentist and had his own practice for many, many years. I think because I am a nurse and I work with a lot of people with cognitive issues, I sort of had a sense that things were starting to become a bit disconnected for him, probably about 10 years ago. My sister and I started to notice primarily that he was becoming really socially disconnected. He would be at family functions and he just wouldn't really participate. And that wasn't his personality. So he became more withdrawn. And then here and there, he would start saying things that were sort of like, what is he talking about? Just sort of out of the blue, being disoriented and things like that. And we both had this like sneaking suspicion that this was the direction we were going in, but we had our antennae up and were watching. And then it just kind of spiraled from there. So, and it continues to spiral on and on.
Sure. I mean, you know, you're in the profession, so obviously you've got a bit of insight. But in terms of, you know, post-diagnostic support that your dad received, you received as a family, what was that like?
So because I had some experience, I knew that probably a geriatrician was going to be the best provider for him. So we were able to find a really wonderful doctor that is very familiar with the progression of this disease. And I think that it was mostly helpful for my mom, actually, because I had, you know, in my career, I work in a hospital as a hospitalist, so I'm a generalist, but before this job, I worked in a lot of nursing home facilities on memory care units, and I kind of understood what the diagnostic criteria was going to be, how that would look. So, and trying to prepare my family for those things that I, you know, when you're a family member, people listen to you only so much. It's very good to have an outside person saying, this is what is needing to happen. So, that was very helpful. And now he continues to see that person. And I sometimes wonder if almost they would have a little bit more support if I wasn't in the picture, because I sort of try to take on some of that. Like, well, this is what we should do. But, you know, if she didn't have, if my parents didn't have me as a person interjecting all the time, I wonder if they would just follow more closely with that provider. But that's primarily been our source of support is the geriatrician. But she's
Sure.
been super helpful.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, I think it is that actually. I sort of had that in my own family because of some of my experience. And you do sometimes feel that, yeah, oh yeah, that's Pete Zelinus, but actually we need this person over here to give us the opinion, and they take my notice. But I think, you know, when it comes down to it doesn't really matter, does it? As long as they get the
No,
support.
100%. So I don't care. I don't care as long as they understand what's happening, or at least my mom, for the most part, like kind of gets what she needs to do. So we're
Now,
in this weird place now because he's not quite impaired enough to need memory care. You know, this awful gray area that people, I think, find themselves in very frequently, but also kind of not safe enough to be operating on his own. So puts a lot on my mom because she's with him all the time. That's really tough.
yeah, it's really you know, it's a difficult stage, and you have to make that decision, don't you, at some stage about memory care, as to, you know, you cross that line, don't you? Your loved one would be better off in memory care, but obviously it's a massive decision for a family to have to make.
And you know, it also being that I've worked in a lot of those places, I know what the limitations are. So it's hard to make the best decision. There is no best decision. There's no right decision. It's so hard. It's hard all around.
Absolutely. Very, you know, it's tough. I think in your email to me when you introduced yourself, you said it's you know, it's all been a bit of a wild ride, and I guess that continues.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I don't live close. I live about an hour and a half, 2 hours away from them. So I'm limited in how much I'm able to go and sort of help out. But then also I'm not sure what help I would be on the day to day, you know? And running interference, I think, is really mostly what it is because my mom is frustrated and then he gets frustrated and, you know, the two of them together.
Yeah, it's a very difficult dynamic, isn't it? And you know, to I suppose, you know, find your part in it, and and I think your part and your role in it is forever changing as well.
Yeah, it is. I'm very fortunate to have a sibling that is super supportive and just sort of is like, I'll do whatever needs to be done. So we just kind of work with each other. I understand a lot of people don't have that situation. So we're lucky to have each other.
The station that makes you feel good.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
On UK Health Radio, we're very proud to announce we were voted Healthcare Radio Broadcaster of the Year at the recent Innovation and Excellence Awards 2025. Thanks to everyone that listens, giving us a worldwide monthly audience of over 1.5 million. This edition of the podcast, my guest is nurse practitioner and health writer Katie Pescatello, working as a team. Now, I know, you know, not one of your great interests is the written word as a health writer. And I've been looking at some of the stuff. Now, it's an area that I'm very interested in because I think you've got a foot in both camps, obviously. You've got medical education, but also the difficulty sometimes in turning that complicated medical world into something that people can readily understand. And I think that's an ability which is very undervalued.
I think I realized in my practice that I, nurses and nurse practitioners are sometimes viewed it as being better at communicating with patients than physicians are. Sometimes that's just because of the system, the way it works, and our time allotted with patients is a little bit different. But I'm also, I just know intuitively, I am a person that has very high emotional intelligence, and I'm good at communicating with people. And I realized that that was very valuable in my job at the bedside. And then I thought, well, I really like writing, so let me see if I can transfer that into useful content for people that, is approachable. Because at the end of the day, people are really clueless as to if they're not immersed in the medical arena, so many of these things are just like they wouldn't have an opportunity to learn all the details that we do and see every day. So it can be a really great opportunity if it's something you're interested in to speak to people about things that they don't and break it down into a way that is very understandable and actionable.
Yeah, I think, that's two of the big keys, isn't it? One, just being able to understand the information, and stage two, what do you do with it?
Right. Exactly. That's like a lot of the, okay, well, great. Now we have this, but now what's the next thing to do? And I get a little frustrated when I'm working in the hospital setting because I know that I'm only limited to what I can do when I'm there with them. And I can give them all this information, but I don't know what's going to happen when they leave. And I thought that writing was actually that opportunity. Okay, well, I can perhaps get myself into a setting that individuals will be able to access that information and follow up with it, as they can as a out in the regular world, not in the hospital.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, a lot of dementia carers most definitely get given so much information, and it's always kind of it's editing it out as well. The internet's a marvelous resource, isn't it? Someone once described it to me as having the keys to the biggest library in the world, and being told to lock up when you leave, which I think is, probably sums it up. But also, there's a lot of stuff in there that's not accurate, so you've got to sift it out, haven't you?
That is very true. And what to listen to and what is accurate and what is actually going to help you. And I think it's also many of the caregivers for people with dementia are loved ones, and that adds like such an extra level of difficulty and complexity to the piece because it's very hard to watch your spouse or your loved one go through these things and make an objective decision. What is the next right thing? And that is really where I think my mom and my family in particular is struggling is with that because it's hard to you've been married to somebody for over 50 years and then trying to now you have to change it. The whole game has changed and you didn't know that you were invited to that game and you don't know the rules of that game. And it's if you're a person that's like a big empath, as my mother is, it's really hard to disconnect your emotions and become objective and make decisions. So I try to be that person for her, but it's hard.
Yeah, very difficult. But I think the more information that you can give, then that decision becomes slightly easier. I guess thing with decision as well, the old saying goes, you met one person with dementia, you've met one person with dementia, because everybody's different. So I guess, one of the first things is to understand, I think you said it earlier in the conversation, there's no right or wrong answer here. Generally, it's what's right for your family and your person.
Yeah, it's hard to I think that there's like a big generalization for individuals with dementia. And that's a large part of the problem, is that if we generalize all these people in the same, put them all in the same boat, they all have a lot of different opinions about things, and they may not be the same opinions or desires that they had 10 years ago, but they are still individuals. It's
Yeah,
important to remember.
sure, absolutely. I mean, I've read some of the stuff you've written, some of the stuff that you've posted as well. And the whole thing about keeping people at home as long as possible. But you've got to keep those people engaged, haven't you? I had a family member where we had to make a decision that, that you're coming to. And the decision was made that actually she was sitting there in a bigger house with very little to do during the day, and was not being cognitively stimulated at all. Whereas if she went into a residential care, then suddenly there were people buzzing around, there were activities going on, and life became a lot brighter. But I suppose if you can get a happy medium between those two, in keeping people engaged when they're at home, then they can stay at home for longer.
And I don't think that your layperson caregiver, like my mom, for example, she understands it now, but I don't think she really grasped the value of cognitive engagement and how we can preserve some of his function just by that. And that's really tough, because that requires a lot of effort. But as you were saying, I posted some things recently about tools that can be utilized at home to help keep people engaged, because it's not a one person job. It's hard to, because my mom has to live her life too and do things, and my dad is piddling around asking her, like, what are we doing next? She feels like a cruise director. She's like, I don't know. What are you doing? You figure it out. She gets exhausted.
And I think another issue is that when people are, they kind of, well, you assume the role of a carer, and people don't actually realize that they've suddenly become a carer. You've had a relationship with somebody for decades, and suddenly that relationship has shifted. And I guess the first thing is identifying the fact you are actually a carer now.
That's actually a really important point that I haven't really hammered home with my mom, and that's something I probably should do, that her role has changed, and that's kind of what it is. And maybe identifying that and realizing that you are that person, maybe it will make it a little bit easier. I'm not sure. But it's something to think about for sure.
Yeah, I think it's it's something that you have to go through. In terms of dementia care, you've got a medical background, medical profession does a great job. But do you think, kind of with your other hat on in what your dad's facing and possibly your mum as well, the social interaction side? With regard to dementia, everybody's looking for a cure, looking for the magic bullet, looking for the wonder drug. But there are a lot of social interventions that can really slow down someone's cognitive decline, but they don't seem to be treated as seriously at times.
Sure. And I think that's actually an area of big interest for me, around people that are not, considering what their cognitive situation will look like in 20 years, people in my age demographic, and fostering your relationships early and creating social circles early and nurturing those things and making sure that you have a support group around you as you continue on. Because that there are plenty of studies out there to that discuss the importance of social connectedness and its impact on cognitive health. And if we don't nurture those things early, and that's part of a large part of the problem for my parents in particular, because my dad retired from his dentistry practice. My mother was the practice manager, so that was a lot of their life, right? And then they moved out of the home that we grew up in into a smaller home in a community full of some people that are around their age group, but they don't know that many friends. A lot Some friends have passed away, some friends have moved. So they don't have a big social circle. And I think that if they did, things would be a little bit easier for them, because not only will it help to preserve whatever cognitive function my dad has left, but also take some of the weight off of the caregiver, because then she's got someone to talk to, or she's got, they do have actually a couple of friends that live quite close to them, and I'm in contact with them, and I often ask the gentleman that is part of this couple, can you go and just like hang out with my dad for a little bit? And he will. They've been friends for a long, long time, and that helps my dad just to have like an outing with somebody that's not my mom. It's good on all fronts, but I think it's really, really important to, yeah, it's not something that we focus on at all. Like nobody has ever asked me in a follow-up medical appointment, like, what's your social connectedness like? Never. Right? And these are really, really important things. And I've got little, I've they're not that little, but I've got kids, they're 12-year-old twins. And I am, that's like a, I think a big part of my parenting criteria is like foster your friendships, keep people close to you, like learn about those things, because what is being old when you have nobody to talk to? Like that sounds very sad and boring to me. I think we should all have lots of people around us, even if you are an introvert.
Yeah, I do. It's strange, isn't it? That it's as you say, people don't think about that in a medical context, which is kind of it's strange to me. And the more people I talk to, like I said, there's lots of researchers doing brilliant work trying to come up with drugs, but while they're doing that, this is where all the social stuff should come into play. But it just, we've got a thing here in the UK. I don't know if you've got the equivalent in the States. We have what's called social prescribing. And basically, that means doctors can prescribe things related to go to a gym or go to this club or whatever, and they can
I know.
actually prescribe it. The only problem's being, and this comes back to you being a writer, a lot of the media have snatched upon this and said, oh, we're wasting money with doctors sending people to the gym or sending people here and not understanding
They're
how
missing the
important those things
point.
are. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, and it's interesting because, well, that's wonderful. We don't employ things like that here. But it seems like any sort of intervention done for these things are done when somebody is, in their seventh or eighth decade of life. But these are really things that we should be. I mean, this, I could obviously talk a long time about. This is something I'm very passionate about, but I think that it's a large part of our mental health crisis right now is just we're not really focusing on the connections that humans can have together. Our society is go, 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 not stopping and connecting.
Yeah, it's, I think it was on your LinkedIn page that I read The Aging You Want Tomorrow Starts Today, which is, that's a really important concept as well. That the World Alzheimer's Disease International 2 years ago, I think, their report, their annual report, was all about prevention, and started introducing the concept of brain health. And the fact that, this, of course, as a medical practitioner, everything's joined together. So, what happens in the heart affects the brain and, vice versa. And it does seem that that's an area, there's a whole area of brain health as well that people don't really know a lot about, to be honest.
No, it's true. And you bring up an important point that oftentimes individuals don't understand. Like we have a lot of patients that come into our hospital with symptoms of a stroke or a like a transient ischemic attack, a little brain infarct or some cognitive impairment, and then we have to rule them out for that particular cognitive impairment. And oftentimes individuals are, why would I have that? And I try to, why would I be at risk for that? And I try to bring it to something that people are more familiar with, maybe a heart attack. Okay. So if you are a person that is at risk for having a heart attack, and people are seem to be more familiar with what the risk factors are for that, or high cholesterol, these things are all connected in our body. It does, if you just you've clogged arteries in your heart, you might have them up here too, and that's, whoa, it's like, oh my gosh. Wow. So it's just a matter of like educating, but brain health going along with all of the other things to keep our well-being going, making decisions from that standpoint.
The station that makes you feel good.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
This is the D-Word podcast with my guest, Katie Bescatello. I mean,
sure.
Also, you wrote, you know, three interesting things about your writing. Number one, get the facts right, so make sure it's accurate. Number two, make it readable. And number three, which I, this is a bit of a gambling, I think, of mine as well, is never sacrifice accuracy for sensationalism.
Sure.
Our media in the UK are always doing that.
Yeah, because it's like, what are people gonna click on? What are people interested in? And like, you know, it's hard to get real information, like you were saying before. What's the right thing to listen to? So I think it's valuable to have real experience at the bedside, to contribute to the you know, enormous amount of information that's out there related to these things. So I just continue to try and put myself into the right position to give that information. It's just a matter of, you know, getting it out to the to people to be able to read it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, one area you do that like, found interesting, I've read a couple, is the blog. So, you know, this week at the hospital,
Oh yeah, I
which,
like that.
well, you know, you really get the chance to actually hear from someone, you know, at the coalface, to be
Yeah,
honest.
I've got a couple coming up that I'm excited to write about. And I work at the hospital probably 6 or 8 days a month, at a couple different hospitals. But whenever I have something really interesting happening, I'm like, oh, I can't wait to write about this one. Because yeah, you don't, it's, you know, people love nurses. People find nurses to be trustworthy and they respect them and they know that they are hard workers. And I hope to shed some light on how challenging the work is, but then also like how difficult it is to be in the hospital and these things happening and, you know, misinformation and individuals ending up in the hospital with problems that they didn't expect to have. And there's just so many different things to talk about because it's so complex. Being in the hospital is not great. Nobody wants to be in the hospital.
Yeah, and I think if you know, you look at that environment for someone with a form of cognitive impairment,
Oh.
and you kind of, you know, multiply that confusion by 100, don't you?
It's the it is the that is my mother always says to me, what can I want to know, like give me one thing I can do to help him. And I just continue to reiterate to her, make sure he doesn't get sick, make sure he doesn't end up in the hospital because everything goes way downhill really fast. And actually, when we're managing patients with cognitive impairment in the hospital, we really try to prioritize getting them discharged as quickly as possible. I don't want to keep them there longer than they need to be because I might be really aware of what this cognitive impairment is going to look like at 2 o'clock in the morning. But maybe the provider that takes over their care the next day is not going to be so mindful of that. And then sometimes people end up, you know, medications being changed, and it can be more harmful than helpful. So in and out as quickly as we can. That's my motto with, and those are the people that I try. They're my favorite patients to see, but I try to see them first so I can scoot along the process. Get them out of here if we can.
Yeah, that's a really vital role. In terms of, your experience of working in a hospital as a nurse, I mean, you obviously have got a good amount of knowledge in terms of cognitive impairment, etc. Is that kind of the same with all your colleagues? Would they be looking out for patients as you
Yeah.
do?
I mean, I think for the most part, I think there's a very good, yeah, I would actually say yes. So I work on a really incredible team of physicians and nurse practitioners, and I would say 90% of the time, those people are really trying to be aware of this is not a person that needs to be here. It's so overstimulating in the hospital, no matter what you do. You have a private room, it doesn't matter. There are beeps and boops, and the lights are on all night long. And, for someone with cognitive impairment, the days and the nights get really confusing, especially the further along they progress. So now you're in an environment where the lights are on all night. Oh gosh, I had a patient last week who is not cognitively impaired at baseline, 99 years old, doing very well for 99, but ended up in the emergency room overnight because there wasn't a bed available in the regular hospital. And that in a hallway bed. So she's just sitting in the hallway on a gurney, this poor woman. And it tipped her right into, I don't know where I am. And it was very frightening for her family. Thankfully, we were able to like right the ship pretty quickly. And she was back to her regular living environment and not cognitively impaired by the time we were able to discharge her. But, and that's somebody that is not cognitively impaired. So imagine you put someone there that has like moderate to severe dementia. It is terrifying, a terrifying place to be. So I think that we're all doing our best to get them to where they need to be. Not because, I mean, they're very challenging patients to take care of in the hospital because they can get agitated or they're scared mostly is what it is, but that comes out in all different ways. So we're not trying to push them out the door just because they're hard to take care of. It's just we need to get them into an environment that's familiar. So I think we're all trying our best at that.
Yeah, I did. Absolutely, I'm sure you are, and it's great that people look out for things like that. In terms of kind of knowledge of dementia, when you do see people that come into the hospital, does it kind of vary in terms of the information families have been given, and you would say like what your mum understands or what they understand?
Yes, definitely. We actually see quite a bit of, I guess I'm going to call it denial or just I don't know what the sensitive way to say this is. Patients will come in and they may live with a spouse that they are, the family is not aware or is seemingly not recognizing the fact that this person has some sort of cognitive impairment. And oftentimes are very adamant, no, my loved one is not confused. And it's not always very like obvious. There are, but you can doing this all the time, there's some like little gaps in stories or just the way that the patient is giving you information that you're kind of recognizing, okay, maybe this isn't exactly what the family thinks it is. So, I mean, and in those cases, just like you were saying earlier, the more information, the better. So, trying to be really transparent with caregivers or just individual like spouses that of patients and giving them resources of, what may be coming in the future. This is maybe an area that you want to pay attention to, and then communicating with outside providers, their primary care providers and things to just say, you might want to keep an eye on that. This is something we notice in the hospital. That's really the best way to do it. If it, in a perfect system that people followed up with their providers all the time when they're supposed to, then that would work well. So yeah, we do get like a wide swath of individuals. Some people totally undiagnosed, and then people that are very much far down the line and maybe come from like a memory impairment unit. So we kind of know what we're dealing with there.
Yeah, a tough job, most definitely, but a very important one. Sadly, time's bringing us to a bit of a close. I mean, with your writing and your career as a nurse practitioner, do you hope to develop the writing side even more, or?
I do. I do. I love being a bedside nurse practitioner, but I got to tell you, it is so physically and emotionally exhausting. I could not do it full time forever. So I'd love to develop writing more, so I can continue to have that piece of, you're still a nurse. You're always a nurse. Once a nurse, always a nurse. And then work clinically just a little bit less, so I can have energy to foster all my friendships.
Very important they are, as we've discussed. Well, it's been a pleasure, Katie.
Well,
Certainly,
thank you so much for having me.
I wish you well with your family and your dad as well. And long may you continue in terms of writing. We need more health writers. We need more information and relevant information. And you're in a really good position to provide that. So thank you for doing that. I'll continue to read your blog.
Oh,
And
thank you.
thank you for being my guest.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to Katie for such an interesting chat. If you want to see examples of her writing, then do go to her website, gabyhealthwriter.com. That's all we have time for on this edition. Thanks for joining me, and I hope you'll check back soon for some more Dementia Talk right here on the D Word Podcast.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.